All right.
Thank you. You may be seated. And excuse me, I'm going to take my mask off while we are conducting arguments. Good morning to everyone. And we will start. The first case of the day is Great Northern Insurance Company versus Transit Authority of Omaha. But we will start by members of the court introducing themselves, and then we will acknowledge the attorneys. So I'm Mike Hattican, I'm the Chief Justice. Good morning to everyone, and now by seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning, I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
Muted.
Try again.
I did that just as a lesson for everyone. Stacy.
I am Jeff Funk. Good morning.
I'm Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. And now, counsel, I'm going to have you introduce yourselves, and I apologize because I do not have immediately in front of me. Welcome to WebEx. I left my materials back in the conference room here. So, counsel, I don't have your names in front of. Well, I do too, Mr. Hams. Good morning to you.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor.
And
I'm Matt Davis, and I'm appearing on behalf of Great Northern Insurance Company. Thank you.
Thank you. And other counsel, I don't have your names in front of my face, so you're going to have to introduce yourselves.
Your Honor, I'm Sam O'Neill. I'm representing the appellant, the Transit Authority of the City of Omaha, doing business as Metro, and I'll be handling the argument.
Very good. Thank you very much. And you were very informative, so that's very helpful to me. And we have other counsel on with us. You may also introduce yourself.
Good morning, Justice Hovigkin. My name is Julie Ryan, and I am also appearing on behalf of Metro. But and Mr. O'Neill will be handling the speaking.
Very good. Thank you very much. So before we begin, counsel, I'm sure you are all aware that I am at the University of Nebraska College of Law, and we have in our audience today lots of young people who are first L's, I believe, and other students able to watch this. So we are very happy that you are participating with us today. Counsel, do either of you have questions before we begin?
I do not, Your Honor.
I do not, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. O'Neill, then, good morning again to you, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Sam O'Neill, and I represent the appellant, the Transit Authority of the City of Omaha, doing business as Metro. Throughout this argument, I will just refer to my client as Metro, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You may.
This appeal stems from a district court decision denying Metro's motion for summary judgment based on the plaintiff, Great Northern's, failure to comply with the notice requirement of Nebraska Revised Statute 13-905. The district court correctly found that Great Northern sent notice to the wrong person. There's no question about that. The evidence submitted at that hearing, including affidavits, from Metro and from Great Northern, show that the correct person is Metro's executive director, and that was Kurt Simon at the time. Great Northern sent notice to a Metro's claims department, which does not exist. Metro does not have a claims department. It never has had a claims department. And so counsel, the court.
Counsel, excuse me for interrupting. Where would a citizen look if they wanted to find out who the duty it is to maintain Metro's records for purposes of service under the political subdivision torts act?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's, so if it's a citizen, it's a little tougher. I think your best bet is to just contact the political subdivision directly and ask for where to send the notice. If we're talking about lawyers, there's plenty of places to look. I mean, the first thing I do if I'm going to send notice to a political subdivision is just go to justice and see where or lawsuits have been brought against that political subdivision in the past. And I'm going to look through the record to see, was this case dismissed for failure to comply with the notice statute? If it's not, then the case is going to tell me exactly how to send notice to that political subdivision. So justice is a great resource in that regard for lawyers.
How would you know that the information is current?
Is current? Well, I mean, you can sort by the cases by date. So, I mean, if you were for Metro, for instance, you can search by date in the district court on justice, and you know, there's cases from this year that you can go through and see how notice was sent in those cases. But so regardless of just using justice, there's still case law that directly tells people how to file a notice with Metro. And so I understand the distinction between a citizen, but I think with lawyers, there's plenty of different resources, including listservs. I mean, there's plenty of listservs where people ask that question all the time. Hey, I'm going to sue this political subdivision. How have you sent notice in the past? And you know, the Nebraska Bar is great about responding to those questions.
Does the fact that there are so many reported decisions involving claims against Metro and not being properly directed to the right person, does that suggest there may be a problem with Metro or a problem with the statute?
I don't think there's a problem with either, Your Honor. I mean, it's there are plenty of political subdivisions that basically follow the same thing that Metro does. I mean, again, this case is going to be different from some of those other ones because Great Northern did not contact Metro. They didn't ask where to send notice. The research they did was just reviewing Metro's website, and when they didn't find who to send notice to, They just made up a claims department and sent notice there and called it good. And I don't think that's correct. I just don't think that you can put in that amount of effort and just comply under the statute, especially when the statute names directly who notice is supposed to be sent to.
Wouldn't a website?
I beg your pardon. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Judge Miller.
Thank you. Do you think we should be differentiating between where to send a claim and how to serve a party when the party is ultimately a public entity?
I guess I don't totally understand the question.
The distinction between serving a claim, like a statutory prerequisite, as distinguished from serving papers where you ultimately have named a defendant in a case?
Well, I guess the distinction there is the purpose of 13-905 is to get notice to the governing body of that political subdivision. And the way the legislature is set up to do that is to provide it to the person, the clerk, secretary, or other official whose duty it is to maintain the official records of the political subdivision. And that ensures that that information gets to the governing board. And some of the case law that we cited in our brief, you know, the court has already discussed that, where there's a distinction between the person who handles the claims and the person whose duty it is to get it in front of the governing body. Okay, so those are two separate things. And where you run into the risk is if you're just sending notice to the person who handles the claims. You know, the statute is set up to make sure it gets to the governing body. If that doesn't happen, you know, we're dealing with the waiver of sovereign immunity. And so those statutes have to be strictly construed to make sure that those notice requirements are met.
Council, before you run out of time here, in reviewing your brief, it does not appear that you have a time of error section. How does that affect our analysis of your issue raised about equitable estoppel?
Well, Your Honor, the court still has the discretion to review the appeal based on plain error. And
tell me how plain error would apply then.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, we're talking about waiver of sovereign immunity, okay? And so the plain error is that equitable estoppel does not apply. And if the court were to affirm the decision of the district court, you're basically stepping in to the legislature's role and changing the precedent that the court has set on filing notice under 20-905.
Status as a summary judgment motion. Basically, you're just being told you don't get to win as a matter of law at this point. You can still raise that issue at trial, can't you?
Yeah, but there's no reason to go to trial because all the facts have been presented to the district court. I mean, it's just clear from the record that notice was sent to the wrong person. And there's no, going off of some of the other case law, there was no misrepresentation made by Metro for Great Northern to send it to the claims department, which doesn't exist.
Well, there weren't competing motion for summary judgment here. So the court hasn't ruled that equitable estoppel exists. It's just ruled that there's material issues of fact on that issue, hasn't it?
And I don't think there are, Your Honor. And the appellate court gets to make its own independent decision on that. And I think the record is clear that there is no material issue of fact. Notice was sent to the wrong person and equitable estoppel does not apply in this situation.
Well, under the plain error statute, a review, it says that the integrity, reputation, and fairness of the judicial process would be jeopardized if we didn't act on that. Is that how serious this is? The entire process is going to be jeopardized if we don't act here?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think an analogy to that would come from the criminal law side, in which, you know, if a sentencing does not comply with the statute, then the court doesn't have any problem coming in and making sure that record is corrected and the correct decision is made. And that's the same situation we have here.
Thank you.
I'm at past my rebuttal time, so if there aren't any questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you very much.
Chief, before we go to the appellee's argument, there is quite a bit of noise in the background, which is making it really hard to hear and understand the lawyers. Could we have the technical people try to fix that?
Thank you. We will carry on. Mr. O'Neill, thank you. And Mr. Thomas, it is Appley's turn here. So again, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please this honorable court. As I previously introduced myself, my name is Matt Hemus, and I have the privilege of representing Great Northern Insurance Company in this matter. We're asking this court to affirm the decision of the district court and remand the matter back to the district court to continue discovery and ultimately to have a trial. We're here because Metro had filed a motion for summary judgment, which the district court denied for the reason that the district court found that equitable estoppel would prevent, there's an issue of fact, which would prevent and bar entering summary judgment in favor of Metro. We think that the critical evidence is relatively straightforward and consists primarily of the statutory notice of claim letter sent by Great Northern to the claims department of Metro on December 7th, 2016, and a letter that an attorney for Metro wrote back to the attorney for Great Northern confirming that on behalf of Metro, they were in receipt of Great Northern's letter of claim and requesting that all future correspondence for that claim be sent to that attorney. The district court reviewed those letters along with other evidence that was presented by the parties and found that the six elements of equitable estoppel had been met and that equitable estoppel would apply and bar entry of summary judgment in favor of Metro.
Is it your understanding that it's barring the entry summary judgment? How does it apply going forward? The court didn't make a finding of equitable estoppel, did it? It just said that there's enough material facts here that summary judgment wasn't appropriate. Is that correct?
Well, thank you, Justice Freudenberg. I'm reading from the order, and the language that the district court said is that they found that there was evidence to meet all of the six elements of equitable estoppel, and that because of that, because there was evidence that met all of those elements, that it barred an entry of summary judgment. So I guess I interpret that as there was a finding, but I guess for purposes of this appeal, I'm not sure if that's a determinative matter. We think under any set of outcomes from this particular appeal, the matter should be remanded back to the district court for further discovery and ultimately a trial in this matter.
Just so I make sure I have the procedures correct in my mind, Great Northern never requested summary judgment on that issue, correct? That was just defending Metro's summary judgment motion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank you. And so in defending that, and in defending it in this particular appeal, it looks like Metro has identified three of the six elements that they take issue with the district court's findings. They take issue with element number one, that you need to establish in order to establish equitable estoppel. That element says, has there been conduct which amounts to a false representation or concealment of material facts, or at least which is calculated to convey the impression that the facts are otherwise than and inconsistent with those which the party subsequently attempts to assert. And so in this particular situation, the district court found that the statement that the attorney for Metro had received the letter in his capacity representing Metro was calculated to convey the impression that the statutory notice letter had been properly received and filed with the governing body of Metro. And that's exactly, if you look at that letter, Great Northern sent a statutory notice of claim. That notice contained the date, the time, the place of the claim. It included the amount of damages. Metro was informed that there was property damage and that Great Northern was going to hold responsible parties responsible. That letter was sent on December 7th. It was signed by certified mail on December 12th. And the very next day, on December 13th, an attorney, Ryan Kuhnhart, sent a letter back to the attorney for Great Northern Insurance Company. And in that letter, it said, please be advised that this firm represents the transit authority of the city of Omaha doing business as Metro. In such capacity, we, Metro, are in receipt of your December 7th, 2016 letter regarding the above claim. Please direct all future correspondence regarding this claim to my attention. And so upon receipt of that, Great Northern was of the belief and understanding that Metro was confirming receipt, proper receipt of the notice of claim. That factual situation is very similar to a case, Lowe versus Lancaster County School District, appearing at 17 Nebraska at 419. The case is well set out in our brief. But just summarized, there, the attorney asserting a claim under the Political Subdivisions Tort Claims Act ultimately hand-delivered a notice of claim to They went to the Lancaster County school offices, and they were told that the person to receive it was the director of human resources. That was incorrect. But the director from human resources then sent a letter to the attorney saying that the human resources department is in receipt of your above reference claim. The low court found that the letter was clearly artfully crafted, and further that the letter, when viewed favorably to the claimant Low, can be seen as calculated to convey the impression that Low's attorney had properly filed the claim, which was then inconsistent with the position that the Lincoln Public Schools and their employee were now asserting. The court also held, giving Low the benefit of all reasonable inferences deducible from the evidence, it can be said that the letter was drafted and importantly sent, given that the law requires no acknowledgement of a filing of a claim, with the expectation that the attorney would rely upon the letter as evidence that the tort claim had been properly filed. Consequently, the letter can be seen as lulling Lowe's attorney into a false sense of security regarding the purported filing, and implies the lawyer needed to neither make further inquiry nor take any additional action with respect to perfection of Lowe's claim. And that's exactly what the evidence is here.
Counsel, I want to move you on to the plain error analysis. Do you believe that this issue raised by the appellant's appeal falls under plain error? And if not, why not?
I would say that as to the appellant Metro, it would not fall under plain error, because it wouldn't irreparably harm their case. The status quo for this action is going to be that the case will be remanded back to the district court and will continue with discovery. And that discovery is necessary because my client was prevented in conducting additional discovery in this case on this very issue. We had asked to take the depositions of all of these individuals from Metro. We had reached out to their attorney, and all of this, what I'm saying, is supported in the record by the affidavit of the other attorney for Great Northern, Sherry MacArthur. And she lays out in great detail that she had contacted the attorneys for Great Northern, and they refused to make someone available to depose and gather more evidence and facts as to the handling of that claim letter until after they filed their motion for summary judgment and after the hearing. And so Great Northern—
I got that. I want to move you on to one more question here before you run out of time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
With regard to your cross appeal, are you claiming the issue that you raise in your cross appeal reaches the level of plain error? And if so, why?
I would, because if this court were to find that that there are no issues of fact regarding who received this notice of claim. So by that, they're asserting that only one person can receive this notice of claim. And when we read the statute, Great Northern, we read it to say there's actually four individuals under the statute, any one of which can receive it. So it would be plain error. The district court only found that it wasn't received by Kurt Simon, but it didn't rule out that a clerk, a secretary, some other person designated to receive it, or a designated law report department had received it. And it could be a de facto person.
I want to ask about the standard, like I did your opponent. So are you asserting that the error raised in your cross appeal would be so severe that it would cause damage to the integrity, reputation, and fairness of the judicial process if we didn't reach it?
I would say so, because you would be looking past the fact that there are issues of fact. There are genuine issues of fact as to whether Edith Simpson is a de facto clerk, a de facto secretary, a de facto other person whose duty it is to maintain the official records of the political subdivision, or if Mr. Coonhart is, and that law firm representing Metro today, is the de facto law department for the political subdivision. So I would say,
counsel, thank you. Counsel, thank you.
Counsel, aren't you in effect arguing that every alleged error with respect to summary judgment reaches the level of plain error? And if you're not, how are you not? How do?
Yeah, and thank you, Your Honor. Trying to think how to respond to that. We're not making any argument. I mean, we support the district court's finding. He found, the district court judge found that there was evidence to support equitable estoppel. We agree with that. There's a factual dispute as to that. And viewed in a light most favorable to us, resisting the motion for summary judgment, we think that should be upheld. As to his determination, the district court's determination, though, that to say there's no factual issue that the one and only person that can receive that claim, the letter was not sent to that person by name, we think that's plain error because the statute allows for up to four people that could receive that letter of claim. And we've only ruled out one of the four. And there's three other persons or entities that could receive the notice of claim. So I hope I'm answering your question directly, Your Honor. I'm trying to. But we're not opposed. We're asking this court to affirm the decision of the lower court.
Thank you. That's sufficient.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Hamus. Madam Bailiff, do we have any time for rebuttal?
1 minute and 12 seconds, Your Honor.
1 minute and 12 seconds, Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm glad that opposing counsel brought up the low case because that is really where I want to focus on. And when I review the low case and I review the facts in this case, I in my head, it makes sense to look at it as like a decision tree. So why was notice sent to the wrong person? We have the low route, which goes to the counsel for the plaintiff in that case was given wrong information by the Lancaster County School District on two separate occasions. He hand delivered a letter to Sue Wright, who the Lancaster School District told him was the person who is supposed to receive those claims. Okay. In this case, we go down and why was notice sent to the wrong person? Because Great Northern guessed. They guessed where to send it. They didn't contact Metro. They didn't do any research. They just made up a claims department and sent notice there. And if you're going to guess, you cannot fall back on equitable estoppel to save you. And that's the point that I want to make to this court. Is that Lowe is totally distinguishable from this case. There were no false representations made by Metro, which led Great Northern to send notice to a claims department that doesn't exist. And I'm out of time, Your Honor. If there's no other questions, I would just ask the court to find that equitable estoppel does not apply and grant summary judgment in favor of Metro. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in Great Northern Insurance Company versus Transit Authority of City of Omaha. Counsel, you are now excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Swicourt versus Police Standards Advisory Council.